This is Around the A, a weekly look at the top stories, news, and interviews from the NHL's top developmental league with your hosts, David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Episode 16 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network and wherever else you get your podcasts. The All-Star hangover is gone, and some massive news breaking across the American Hockey League over the last week or so. We're going to talk about everything you need to know about the move from San Antonio to Vegas for the Rampage, and a whole lot more coming up on this episode with myself, David Foote, and Patrick Williams. Glad to have you with us wherever you may be listening, Apple Music, Google Play, you name it, we're probably on there by now, 16 episodes in, and so glad to have you along. Also coming up on the show this week, we're going to head back to California in a couple locales. We're going to check in with Chris Pichet, who is the play-by-play voice of the Stockton Heat. That's the AHL affiliate of the Calgary Flames, if you're not aware. And we'll go to San Diego as well. We'll be joined by Andy Zilch, who is the play-by-play voice of the San Diego Gulls. Emily Harlan from Fox Sports San Diego is going to join us, too, to check in on the affiliate of the Anaheim Ducks. But, Pat, before we get to all of the AHL to Vegas talk, because there's going to be a lot of it coming up a little bit later on in the show, let's get back to our routine, if you will, our post-All-Star routine of checking in on some of the top performers in the league over the past week. And aside from, you know, the teams that we talk about a lot these days, the Belleville Senators, the Milwaukee Admirals, a team like the Iowa Wild has been pretty hot lately, unbeaten in regulation in the last nine games, 8-1, 0-1 in their last 10, and getting themselves a pretty steady handle on second place in that Central Division.
Yeah, a real fun team to watch. Kind of, I think, a little bit overshadowed this year, especially Central Division there with the Milwaukee Admirals, who've run away with everything for so much of this season. But Iowa's really had a nice turnaround. They played the Stockton Heat back-to-back games this weekend, finished it off with a 7-4 win on Sunday afternoon. So Jerry Mayhew, a good veteran scorer out there, is piling up goals this year. He's been phenomenal really from day one. And Minnesota Wild's affiliate there is they had struggled for the longest time. They had moved from Houston in 2013, really struggled to find their way out there and establish a winning culture. Tim Army came in there last year and has just done a really phenomenal job there, and they have a little bit of everything right now. They have some good young goaltending there with starting with Kaapo Kähkönen, and and certainly offensively, top two scorers in the league, and I mentioned May, who has 35 goals in 42 games, so just on a torrid pace this season, and kind of player that's maybe not quite on the NHL track. He is 27 years old. That always works against a player, but he had 27 goals last year, is kind of his big breakout year. But this year he's just gone on, remarkable pace and shooting 22%, which always helps the old stat line as well. So, he's been phenomenal, and he just had a huge weekend, back-to-back two-goal games, 7 points on the weekend, and I was rolling. They're gonna be a tough out, I think. If it is ultimately them and Milwaukee in the playoffs at some point, I think Milwaukee will have their hands full with Iowa.
Yeah, Gerald Mayhew's 55 points, second overall in league scoring. Sam Annis at 57 points, a teammate of his. And anytime you can get a pair of guys that can get to the top of the league scoring charts, it's obviously going to pay big dividends. You mentioned Kaapo Kähkönen as well, sitting amongst the top goaltenders in the league, at least by goals against average. He's in the top five or so. Save percentage, he's still inside the top 10, but a nice combination of things working out for the Iowa Wild. Again, 8-0-0-1 is the streak, so unbeaten in regulation, and still a ways to go to catch the Milwaukee Admirals throughout the course of the season. But again, the important thing, I think, is the distance they're creating between third and fourth place and even fifth place in that Central Division, with Chicago and Grand Rapids tied at 51 points coming into the week, and then Texas right behind them at 50. If you can get yourself some comfort and some cushion at the top of the division, really in any division in this league, that's going to go a long way towards being able to relax a little bit and maybe take things easier as you head through the playoff stretch.
Absolutely. I mean, that's been a strange division all year. I mean, Texas had that horrible losing streak in November. They looked like they were done. They battled their way back. I've been really one of the better teams ever since then for the past 2 months, right on the brink of the playoff line. But you mentioned Iowa. They have a 15-point lead going into the week on the Chicago Wolves there for third place. So they're sitting in about as comfortable as a position as you can be in February. Milwaukee's actually only 7 points ahead at this point. Iowa's done a really nice job in closing that gap. And nothing against Milwaukee. They've continued to pretty much do their job as well. But I don't know. Iowa's kind of a little bit of everything. And, especially if you look at the Minnesota Wild, probably not making the playoffs this year. That eliminates any possibility of losing players to Minnesota. And, depending on how things shake up, maybe you get a prospect or two back if Minnesota decides to sell at the deadline. So, I mean, all sorts of ramifications for Iowa. But, this is looking like a team that's really could be dangerous. They went to the second round last year. That was kind of their breakthrough year. And this year they're really back and doing a little bit of everything. They're a fun team to watch. They know how to put the puck in the net. Right up there almost on pace with Milwaukee. So, it's been a fun team. And I think, that division is usually kind of a bit of a mess anyway, because you always seem to get these crazy playoff races down the stretch. But, those two really have taken away some of that, in the sense that now there's only two spots available, third and fourth place. So there's gonna be a lot of competition there. Chicago, Grand Rapids, really Texas can't afford to slip up at all, where they could definitely fall below that line come April.
Some other teams streaking heading into the week include the Colorado Eagles over in the Pacific Division. And again, coming up later on the show, we're going to get a pretty in-depth look at the Pacific Division. We'll chat more about the second-place Stockton Heat and the fifth-place San Diego Gulls, who find themselves just a point behind the playoff line coming into the week. But Colorado's won four in a row. San Diego is on a 5-0-2-0 unbeaten in regulation streak. We mentioned Iowa at 8-0-0-1, unbeaten in nine. Belleville Senators have a 7-game win streak. The Toronto Marlies, who have been struggling of late, have won two in a row. So, minimal streak, but meaningful, I think, at the same time for a powerhouse that is also fighting to make the playoffs. And then in the Atlantic Division, the Hershey Bears trying to extend their lead atop the Atlantic with a 3-game streak. The Charlotte Checkers coming up behind and again battling for a playoff spot with Wilkes-Barre Scranton. They're on a 3-game streak as well. And then Bridgeport down in the basement of that division. But if you're looking for positives, they've won back-to-back games and 5 of their last 10. So lots of teams getting back into the rhythm, if you will, after the AHL's All-Star break.
Yeah, you look at like Wilkes-Barre Scranton, they were on a roll. They had an 8-game point streak, and now they had a tough weekend, dropped to they're below the playoff line again there. So Charlotte's kind of been up and down a little bit. They had such a good run there, 15 wins in 18 games, I believe it was, December into January, and slowed a little bit, but now they're kind of back now, three in a row. Took back-to-back wins against Hartford. Hartford's trying to survive without Igor Shesterkin and Nets. That's not going to be an easy task for them. Honestly, I think they look a little bit vulnerable in that sense. That's a major piece of their lineup that looks like he's gone for good. So if they can't get things squared away there in net, that could be a challenge for them. And, really, that you got about six teams there in that fight. Hershey's been on a tear lately, but, spots 2 through 4, that leaves a lot of competition for them. 5 teams battling for 3 spots. So this is going to be a fight. Really, every division you look at is really tight at the moment.
Yeah, if we just look at the playoff line, the difference between 4th and 5th In the North, it's 1 point between Charlotte. In the Atlantic, it's 1 point between Charlotte and Wilkes-Barre. But then Springfield is only 3 points off the playoff line. In the North, it's dead even, Toronto and Laval. And then Syracuse is only 2 points back. And then Binghamton is charging 5 points back at the playoff line. In the Central Division, Grand Rapids and Texas, it's 1 point. And then 4 points back is Rockford, 5 points back is San Antonio. And then in the Pacific, again, it's only a one-point difference. Maybe a little more ground for Bakersfield, who are 6 points back coming into the week. But it just goes to show you how tight and how tough it is to get into the Calder Cup playoffs.
Really is. That divisional format makes it really difficult, especially with such heavy divisional play. You get these huge swings, the proverbial 4 point games, so you look at it like that Pacific Division race there. You have Ontario, San Diego, for my money, the biggest rivalry in the league. Those two teams always go at it, full speed, full tilt, 1 point separating them. But San Diego has three games in hand. And, that's going to be a fun race down the end. Really, nobody in that division is slumping other than Tucson, who's in first place. So you can't really at this point afford even the smallest of slip ups, because if you do, you're just going to be in trouble. And, there's minimal margin for error, especially in some of these divisions where you have a team or two starting to run away, like the Centrals. That really cuts down the number of available spots. So, this league, you said it before, you coined the phrase, it's a league of streaks, and you better get on one when you can, because you don't know when that turn's coming around again. Teams like, San Diego are on a run right now. Ontario was on a run before. You need to string a few of those streaks together, because inevitably those bad times are coming.
Yeah, that could be the tagline for the podcast, I think. Around the A, it's a league of streaks.
It really is.
Because it makes such a difference.
You have to do it when you have your players back, when you have some good health, everything. This is the only league in the world, really, where at any given moment, your best players can get caught up, ripped off your roster in the heartbeat. So when you have them, you need to hold on to them as long as you can and get those points, because, like I said, those inevitably, the better they play, the more likely they are to get caught up, and then you're in a world of hurt until they come back. So we're seeing that with some teams like Hartford and Shesterkin, but Ontario just lost Cal Peterson in net up to LA. So that's the name of this game. You win while you can, and then you try to hold on for dear life until then.
Well, before we get to our focus on the Stockton Heat with Chris Pichet, who's the play-by-play voice out in Stockton, you mentioned it with Iowa. They are the affiliate of an NHL team that is in all likelihood not going to make the playoffs. Look at that trend across the American Hockey League. Belleville, the Ottawa Senators, probably not going to make – well, they're not going to make the playoffs. Let's be honest here. The New York Rangers are battling – but they're not going to make the playoffs yet. Hartford is having an excellent season. It really does seem to trend that way. A team, Nashville, is likely not going to make the playoffs, but Milwaukee is the best team in the American Hockey League. It's amazing the way that trend seems to trickle down, where, we don't need our best guys. You can have them, and the teams that are good in the AHL, it doesn't always translate, and usually doesn't translate that way up to the NHL.
No, it's very unpredictable. And you look at, we say Minnesota's out, and they are. They're only 5 points behind, though. But 5 points in the NHL is a huge gap. 5 points in the AHL, that can be a weekend. with the heavy divisional play, just changes so much. You really can make up ground pretty quickly. But like you said, those teams that are, on the outside looking in, once April rolls around, April, I think 3rd is the last game of the NHL regular season. The AHL season actually goes an extra week long. So you have those players there that come back from the NHL club. They can come in and dramatically shift things around, and then you have them for the playoffs. So that's to say nothing of having players come in for the Canadian Hockey League and junior from college, over from Europe, wherever. We've seen that happen time and time again. So the rosters really evolve well beyond the trade deadline and even the AHL roster deadline, right into April. So you'll have impact players coming in sometimes in May, if their junior team gets knocked out late in the postseason there. So, this is a league. It's trying to predict anything in this league is kind of a fool's errand. But this year especially is, I think, even more so just because of how tight everything is.
Yeah, it's been pretty wild to this point, and it's only going to get more wild as we get down the playoff stretch in the American Hockey League. Again, a busy week it's been, and will continue to be as teams reset and get back into the rhythm after the All-Star break. Let's head out west. We've been trying to spend as much time in the Western Conference as we can in this, I suppose, second half of our first season of Around the A. We focused a lot on the Eastern Conference in our earlier episodes, but starting to make some inroads on the pilgrimage out west. And we're going to chat later on with Andy Zilch and Emily Harlan, who cover the San Diego Gulls. But first, Chris Piché, who's the play-by-play voice of the Stockton Heat, is going to join us. So lots of insight to come from him. But maybe before we get to him, Pat, a quick thought on the Stockton Heat from your perspective and what they've been up to this season.
Yeah, for a lot of reasons, they're one of the less heralded teams in the league. I think some of that's just being on the West Coast, a lot of late night, 10 o'clock type games. They've had their share of prospects come through, but they've struggled in past seasons to make the playoffs. They're not one of those teams that's necessarily near their parent club, so you don't get a whole ton of promotion that way. It's similar to Bakersfield in that sense, although Bakersfield has really found a good niche for themselves. Stockton's, they're really sort of still in San Jose Sharks country, so that's a little bit of a tough sell sometimes, but this year they've had a really nice breakthrough and have some really nice prospects there and some guys really that are a little bit more unheralded, Matthew Phillips, Glenn Godden, guys like that who came in without a ton of, fanfare, but have really turned themselves into solid prospects. This is a team they've been kind of going neck and neck all year with Tucson. Tucson stumbled a little bit lately, so this is a chance for Stockton to really make up some ground here and maybe overtake them even for first place. But, it's a fun team. They play a real high-up-tempo game, real offensive-first mentality, and, it's worked pretty well for them so far. I'm not sure where they, how they shake out, long term for the playoff, in terms of going on a deep run. But, for right now, definitely for regular season, they're one of the more enjoyable teams to watch. I'd recommend anybody, if you're an AHL fan, you have the, TV package, give them a look because pretty much every night you're going to see some real tempo hockey.
Yeah, and they are, as you mentioned, in the fight for top spot in the Pacific Division, 4 points back of Tucson. With two games at hand coming into the week, they've lost their last two. We'll find out perhaps what's contributed to those recent defeats and how they do stack up moving on into the playoff run with the play-by-play voice of the Stockton Heat, Chris Piché, joins us next on episode 16 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network. The A on the Sports Podcasting Network. David Foote and Patrick Williams here. We are going to get to all of the chatter about San Antonio's move to Vegas coming up in just a little bit, but first time to head out west for the first of two times on the show this week. We're headed to Stockton, where we're joined by the play-by-play voice of the Stockton Heat, Chris Piché, to learn a little bit more about what's happening out that way. Thanks for doing this, Chris. Appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
Stockton Heat, second place in the Pacific Division, on a pretty good run of late, despite those couple of losses recently. Before we get into kind of the nuts and bolts of the roster and things like that, wanted to talk a little bit about the market as a whole. We want to give our listeners a bit of an inside look at what it's like to be an AHL fan in Stockton and kind of how that city and market supports the club. What is Stockton like as a market for the American Hockey League?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting market. It's similar to a lot of the other markets that transitioned from ECHL teams to American League clubs, in that you've got a pretty passionate fan base that really got into hockey in 2005 when the Stockton Thunder first started here. And then it was 10 years of the Thunder in the ECHL, and it's been 5 years with the Heat. And I'd say it's an untraditional hockey market. You could compare the fan base to maybe something out closer to the Bay in San Jose, which is just an hour and a half from here. So it's fans that really weren't super knowledgeable 10, 15 years ago about the sport. But with the Thunder being here and then the rise of the San Jose Sharks and, of course, the Barracuda at the American League level, that kind of fan base has gravitated over towards Stockton. So you'll see a lot of fans that are Heat fans, but also like going down to the SAP Center to watch the Sharks play as well.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the rivalries with the nearby teams and the location. What's it like when the Barracuda come to town, given how close you are? And like you say, the fact that the closest NHL team to Stockton is not the affiliate of the Heat.
Yeah, it does create a little bit of a different dynamic. And I think in an ideal situation, as we've seen over the last few years, particularly as a lot of teams are trying to move their American League affiliate closer to the NHL club. And I think when the Barracuda do come to town, Stockton, we play them 12 times a year. You'll see quite a few Barracuda sweaters and Shark sweaters at Stockton Arena and vice versa. When the Stockton Heat go, a lot of the season ticket holders will make the, hour and 15 minute, hour and a half trip down to the SAP Center. So there's definitely a little bit of an unwritten rule of, if you support the Heat at the NHL level, there's definitely going to still be some Heat fans that are Sharks fans as well. But there definitely is a pretty loyal group of now Calgary Flames fans in Northern California, which is cool to see.
Yeah, let's talk about that affiliation. You mentioned the diehard fans who followed along with the Heat from the ECHL. Calgary's a pretty diehard hockey market as well. How does that affiliation seem to work out?
Yeah, I think it works out really well. From the fan standpoint, the fans, to your point, I mean, they love their hockey up there and they're very dialed in. We get a ton of fan engagement and a lot of our, I'd say, most loyal followers, on social media and all the different platforms that fans can tune in with AHL TV subscriptions and all that. A lot of that comes from the folks up in Calgary, and they are really tuned into how some of the top prospects are doing down in Stockton. And also they care about the success of the team. I mean, I know that they're pretty far removed from what happens down in the U.S. It's not only a different market, but a different country entirely, but they're pretty focused on what's happening, not only in the development of prospects, but also the wins and losses of the American League team in Stockton.
Chris, you had real promising head coach, or younger guy, Cale McLean. For those of us who don't see him on a daily basis, how would you describe his personality? How does he manage his players? What is he like kind of behind closed doors on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, good question. I think he's definitely the type of guy, if you were to chat with players, they really like playing for him. He's a guy that is going to make sure that he gets to know the player, not just as a player on the ice, but who they are as a person. He's that type of coach, and I think he's done a really good job in his second year, kind of being able to have a fine line of, he knows a lot about these guys away from the ice, but at the same time, he creates a level of respect where the players know, that they can have a good relationship with him, but at the same time, Cale and the rest of the staff is going to make sure that these guys are coming ready to work. And I think just in his jump from year one to year two, it's now his third year in Stockton, but he's definitely, I think, in this year kind of been able to get over the hump a little bit and get a little bit more out of the team. And I think in his second year, the team has really responded quite well. And I think he's, a pretty good example of a young coach that's worked his way up from the ECHL, was an assistant under Ryan Huska for a year, and now Ryan Huska is responsible for the defenseman up in Calgary as one of the assistant coaches up there. So I think it's been a good progression for Cale on the coaching side of things, and I really think there's been some pretty strong buy-in from the players in year two.
What is the setup there like for players? Obviously, you're not near Calgary, but on the other hand, it is a lot more geographically convenient than it used to be for the Flames. How does Stockton, how do they work their logistics in terms of moving players back and forth and management, keeping tabs on the team and those sorts of things?
Yeah, I'd say management is really involved, despite the fact that, you know, it is a lengthy travel day. The nice part about it in terms of sending players up and down is that although there's not really – there is an airport in Stockton, but when the team travels, we fly out of Sacramento. And we're basically within an hour and 15 minutes of four big airports. So San Jose, Oakland, San Francisco, and Sacramento. You know, you have to go about 50 minutes to get to the closest one in Sacramento. But it does provide some options. A lot of times we'll send guys out of San Francisco and you can get up to Calgary pretty quickly. And the staff up in Calgary is down here very frequently, despite the, you know, the distance. We were in Iowa this weekend and there were three members of Calgary staff with us for the weekend. And I wouldn't say that that's all that abnormal. I'd say Calgary, for the most part, is pretty dialed into what's happening with the AHL team.
Marketing-wise, you know, you're in, I guess you would call it San Jose Sharks territory to a certain extent, and you're the Calgary affiliation. So there's, I'm sure there's a little bit of a line to walk in terms of not moving into San Jose territory too much. How do you market the team? Is it a regional approach? Do you look towards Sacramento? You know, what is the team trying to do in that regard?
Yeah, good question. We've actually found a lot more success in the last year to 2 years working up towards the Sacramento market. Stockton, you know, has responded pretty well, and it's a pretty consistent group of people. But as you guys both know, it's really trying to find how can you get into a new group of people and new fans that can get excited about hockey. And I think Sacramento's responded pretty well. It's something that since I've gotten here, we've kind of taken a little bit more of an aggressive shift towards the Sacramento market, and they've responded pretty well to it. And then we'll also get fans out from San Jose as well. There's kind of a sweet spot of people in between Stockton and San Jose that, you know, don't live completely in San Jose, but will go to Sharks games, but also will come the other direction and come to Stockton. So, you know, we definitely do hit on the people in the San Jose market, but I'd say, you know, the group of towns that you guys aren't familiar with for the most part, but Livermore and Dublin, and there's a lot of towns halfway between Stockton and San Jose geographically, and then the group of towns in and around Sacramento, which is about 40, 45 minutes from Stockton. We tend to do pretty well in those areas, extending outside of the Stockton fan base.
We're chatting with the Chris Pichet, the play-by-play voice of the Stockton Heat. You can find him on Twitter at Chris_Pichet. Let's talk a little bit about the battle that the Heat have been in with the Tucson Roadrunners this year for top spot in the division. For fans who, you know, maybe are like us and kind of based in the Eastern Conference, what's that rivalry like? What's the division like, given that you've got so many teams within close proximity, and then Colorado kind of stuck away down there?
Yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic because with Stockton's schedule, we played Iowa this past weekend, and they're the only team outside of the Pacific Division that Stockton plays all season long. So we play the four other California teams 12 times each. And as you guys can imagine, once you play a team more than, you know, six, seven times in the second half of the season, there are some really strong rivalries that form. And there's a bunch of times during the year where we'll play a team, you know, three times out of a stretch of four games. Like earlier this season, we played Tucson in three straight games. So rivalries do stir up, and Tucson has had Stockton's number this season, and they're a really strong team, as we've seen all year. They've kind of been sliding over the last couple of weeks, but Stockton's plays them with three matchups with them over the next 10 days. So it should be a really good opportunity for the Heat to try and catch some ground in the top place in the Pacific.
Do you find those rivalries make it tougher or easier from a marketing standpoint? Because I know for us, here in Belleville, like, we've got Toronto Marlies 12 times a season, the Laval Rocket 12 times a season. And for me as a broadcaster, and, you know, as a fan from an outside perspective, it gets a little bit tiresome, I feel, to see the same teams over and over and over again. How do the fans respond to that out that way?
Yeah, I think with San Jose, it's a good thing because people that are Barracuda fans or like the Sharks and the Heat like to see those two teams play against one another. But I think at some point there is, oh, okay, it's Ontario in here again. And we just saw them, it feels like, for three straight home games. So I think to an extent, it maybe does get tiresome. But I think fans have become relatively accustomed to it since, you know, there really aren't as many teams out here geographically. But it can get difficult at times when you're promoting the same groups of teams. But I think with the market in Stockton, it is a little bit different to a market in Belleville or a traditional East Coast hockey market, because the fans, a lot of times, you know, they do care about the wins and losses for the team, but we probably sell in Stockton the fan experience a little bit more than you would with the traditional hockey market in terms of the marketing approach, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Would you like to see more out of division or out of conference play for the Heat?
Yeah, I mean, I think the broadcaster probably always has a little bit of a bias. I think it makes the preparation for the games a little bit easier. I mean, I feel like, you know, this week we're playing San Jose for the ninth time already this season. And, you know, my homework on them is pretty much done. But I think, yeah, I think it's always good to see a different group of players. And I know in speaking with a lot of the guys on Stockton and around the division, it definitely seems like there would be an appetite on the players, you know, front to play more teams throughout the course of the season. But it is, as you guys both know, it's kind of a tough line to straddle, right? Because you want less time for the players to be flying all over the country. And it's obviously a little bit harder to get around being out in California. But I think, you know, you have to work with what the schedule is. But I think in an ideal world, it would be a little bit more of a variety of opponents throughout the course of, you know, for the teams out in the Western Conference or in the Pacific, the 68 game schedule. So,
Chris, just want to ask a few prospects. I'll start with Matthew Phillips. He had that kneecap injury, obviously, not too long ago. What's his status right now, and you know, what is his timeline for coming back?
Yeah, so he's considered week to week right now, getting back from his knee injury. And I think, you know, he's coming back at a pretty rapid pace. I think the recovery's been good. There was never really a specific timetable set on his return, but he definitely is not behind schedule at all. He's been on the ice skating here for the last little while. And I think, you know, his return could potentially be as soon as, you know, before the end of the month. It's hard to know exactly when he'd be back, but he is considered week to week. And I think a lot of encouraging signs with him getting some pretty good skates in with one of the assistant coaches and the skills coach down for Stockton and Dominic Pittis. And so he's done a good job trying to get Matthew Phillips back up to speed. And he's a player, as you guys both know, who is really dynamic in the first half of the season. And the team is, you know, eager to get him back on the ice.
Yeah, you mentioned that. He's a sixth-round pick back in 2016. Had a pretty solid rookie season last year, but, you know, 5'7", big breakout year this year. What did you see different this year from him as opposed to last year?
I just think he's so much more confident, and it's the most cliche answer, but you really can see it. The way he is commanding the puck when he doesn't have it in the neutral zone, and for a guy that is 5'7", and he is, you know, he's 5'7". He's a small guy, and he goes into the corners hard to get pucks. And if you watch him compete to get loose pucks in the corner, you'd think he's, you know, 6'1", 200 pounds. He just, this season, he doesn't play with any fear. You know, 30 points for him, 14 goals in his 28 games before suffering the injury. And he just seems like a player that is, you know, really dialed and engaged in all situations. He's been playing penalty kill this year. He was on the top power play unit, and he's, you know, part of one of the top two lines that kind of have been rotating all season long with call-ups and different injuries. But he's been, you know, one of the top guys for the team all season before his injury.
When I think of Stockton and Calgary, I think of some unheralded guys like a Phillips and Andrew Mangiapane. Glenn Gauden, you know, guys that didn't come in with a ton of fanfare, but really have performed well. Mangiapane obviously moved on to Calgary. But can you tell us a little bit about Gauden and what you've seen from him, his development curve in the last year and a half?
Yeah, he's a similar guy to Matthew Phillips in terms of the way they've developed. Now, I would consider them two pretty different players. Going back to Phillips, he's a guy that we mentioned is a small guy that will create. It is kind of a, you know, he's got 14 goals this year, but I'd say he's a you know, a pass first playmaking type of winger. And then as for Glenn Godden, you know, he's a guy that can, you know, play at the penalty kill level. Like, I think, you know, he's one of those guys that's probably knocking on the door to get his first NHL call up. Matthew Phillips had it earlier in the season, didn't play in a game. But for Glenn Godden, he's a guy that really would be ready to play penalty kill probably at the NHL level, can play on the power plays, really dangerous with the one timer from the half wall. And he's a guy that, you know, he's one of those players that I would kind of characterize as someone that he'll have a 2-3 point night. He'll go plus three, and he just kind of seems to do that every single night. And he flies under the radar when he does it. He's not necessarily going to be the flashiest guy, you know, on the ice, but he's got 40 points in 43 games, and he's been really consistent. He's very strong on the faceoff. He's probably the go-to guy on the penalty kill and power play to win back draws. He's good on both sides, but he's just one of those guys that, you know, if you just go and watch one game, he might not stand out. But over the course of the season, you know, he's just such a solid player.
Goaltending-wise, John Gillies has kind of been a real consistent figure there over the last number of years. But new goalie here, Artem Zadidulin, what have you seen from him as he adjusts to North America?
Yeah, I think he's been really good for the team this year. He's got 14 wins, 14-4-3. And I think when you look at his overall numbers, they might jump out and say, oh, well, you know, a 3.15 goals against average and an 8.96 save percentage, you know, aren't the flashiest numbers. I just think he's had a couple of games where, you know, he's been pulled and hasn't had his A game. And you could say this about a lot of, you know, AHL netminders probably across the league. But when he is at his best, which is, you know, more often than not, he's really good for the team. And he seems to rise to the occasion. You know, if he struggles early, he might allow another couple goals and then get pulled. But if he's in a tight game, he seems to always find the right side of tight games late and makes a lot of big saves in the process. And, you know, guys seem to really like playing in front of him. And he's had to adjust to North America. He came here not knowing any English other than hello. And over the last couple of months, it's improved quite a bit. I mean, he truly did not speak any English. And luckily, there's a number of Russians that are on Stockton here in the American League. But that's got to be a tough transition for someone coming into a country where you don't speak, you know, a lick of English. And I think he's handled that well. He's trying to develop as not only a goaltender, but also as a person in a foreign country here. So
last question here for Chris Pichet, the voice of the Stockton Heat, 4 points back of Tucson heading into the week, two games at hand on the road runners, and Colorado nipping at the heels a little bit as well. What's got to go right here the rest of the way to maybe catch Tucson up top and to perhaps create some distance between Colorado and the other teams that are chasing that playoff line in the Pacific Division?
Yeah, it seemed like just about a week or two ago where Tucson and Stockton both had really, you know, comfortable leads over the rest of the pack. And the way the schedules worked out, you know, Stockton just hasn't played many games over the last month. You know, we played two this past weekend, but it was, you know, the All-Star break and just a bunch of time off. And I think this weekend with a pair of losses to Iowa served as a wake-up call for the team. He had Coach Cale McClain talked about it as, you know, this is our chance to really put the foot to the gas. And there's a bunch of games against teams that are just chasing Stockton. We mentioned the three games against Tucson over the next 10 days. But I think the team's just going to have to get back to trying to lean on some more secondary scoring and making sure that they're getting goals from all up and down the lineup. You know, some veteran guys in Alan Quine and Austin Zarnik and Byron Fraze have really been dynamic as part of that top line over the last couple of weeks. And I think there's an opportunity and a challenge for some of the younger guys to try and step up with a bunch of players that have been regulars this season up in Calgary, with Brandon Davidson up top with the NHL club, Buddy Robinson up there as well, and Alexander Yellison, the most recent call-up to go up to Calgary. So I think there's a good opportunity for a lot of younger players. And I think the veterans and the coaching staff is, you know, putting a challenge to those guys to try and step up. And I think that will be one of the keys to look for as Stockton tries to catch Tucson and keep Colorado behind them.
Former Belleville Bull, Alan Quine, tell him we say what's up if you see him around.
Yes, will do. Yeah, he's been on quite a run here for Stockton. His points per game pace over the last 2 years at the club, I was just chatting with him about it yesterday on the travel day. I mean, he's right around 1.3 points per game in his 2 years with Stockton, and he continues to have another good season, just passing Glenn Godden on Sunday with a pair of points. So we'll pass along the hellos to a guy from the area. So.
Yeah, great player for sure. Thanks for doing this, Chris. Chris Piche is the voice of the Stockton Heat, the affiliate of the Calgary Flames. You can find him on Twitter at Chris_Piche. And, of course, if you've got the AHL TV package, you can tune in to see what's happening out in Stockton and hear Chris at work. Thanks again for doing this, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate the time, guys.
Take care.
Episode 16 of Around the A continues on the Sports Podcasting Network. Everywhere else you get your podcast, David Foote and Patrick Williams with you. Thanks to Chris Piche for his time. Again, you can find him on Twitter at Chris_Piche, P-I-C-H-E-R. You can stay up to date on the Stockton Heat and everything that's happening out that way. We'll head back out to California in just a little bit. Andy Zilch and Emily Harlan from the San Diego Gulls will be with us to chat about arrival of those Stockton Heat, but we'll get a little bit more into the San Diego-Ontario rivalry that raised its, we'll call it an ugly head, at the All-Star game. We'll talk more about that coming up. But for now, Pat, we got to get into the big story, really, not just across the American Hockey League. I mean, this news made ripples across the National Hockey League, the sports world, and beyond. It's a unfortunately familiar story for fans in various cities and various sports when the team that you follow, the team that you love, gets uprooted and moved elsewhere. Relocation in sport is not a new thing, but this most recent example is one that we talked about on our All-Star special. At least we talked about the potential of it. A move of an AHL franchise to Vegas to come under the ownership of the Vegas Golden Knights umbrella. And when we talked about it a week or so ago, we didn't even have an inkling of who it was going to be, where they were going to come from. But we had a bit of a thought on a game plan. Well, we found out now, it's unfortunately for the fans of the San Antonio Rampage going to be the Rampage, and the St. Louis Blues are again in limbo as far as their affiliate goes. There's a lot to break down here for this story, so why don't we start first off with your reaction? When we talked about it, like I say, we didn't really have any other details other than Vegas is looking, this could potentially happen. And here we are 2 weeks removed from the All-Star break, and the deal's done.
Well, yeah, you go back 2 weeks, all of 2 weeks, Dave Andrews at the All-Star event, the annual lead address, he was sounding the alarm that, if this is going to happen, it better happen soon because May is our deadline. So that roughly was 3 months. Well, they wrapped up the whole thing in 10 days. Now, we don't know how much in advance they had been discussing it, but it's tough these days to find an available franchise. Everybody in the NHL wants to hold on to their franchise for the very reason that we saw with the St. Louis Blues. They're in a tough spot right now. They don't have their own affiliation now. And so they always, it's a game of musical chairs in a lot of ways. And now they're on the outside looking in, and you have to find a new dance partner. And, the ironic thing is it's the second time since 2017 that the Vegas Golden Knights have kind of swooped in there and taken their affiliate. So I'm sure the St. Louis Blues aren't feeling too great about things right now. But, I really want to sort of focus on San Antonio. I mean, when a major league team leaves town, we've seen it with the Atlanta Thrashers, for example. Obviously, there's a lot of focus on the fans there. But the same thing applies in the American Hockey League. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be as large of a fan base. But fans down in San Antonio were hardcore fans. That was their team. That was, for them, that was their NHL team in a lot of ways. And they had a team there since 2002. So it's 18 seasons. And frankly, they've been subject to a lot of bad hockey over the years. A lot of affiliations that weren't great. They had Florida in there, then Arizona. They had Florida again. They went to Colorado. now they signed a 5-year deal last year with St. Louis. Everything looks pretty great. And then this happens, right? And this is a team averaging almost 6,000 fans per night, 12th in the league in attendance. Certainly not a team that, you know, in terms of fan support should be leaving town, but it's a ruthless business in a lot of ways now. And it's really a shame for fans down there. It's going to be tough to get another team in there just for the simple fact there aren't too many available teams now. And it also hurts the Texas Stars. They were big rivals there with San Antonio for years. And then back even when you go to the Houston Aeros, they had three teams. There was a really nice geographical fit now. Houston's gone. San Antonio's gone. Texas kind of on the island now. So in a lot of bad ways, this is a really bad development for the American Hockey League. You know, they were happy with San Antonio for a long time. You know, it was a franchise that for all its problems on the ice, did an admirable job off the ice, all things considered. And now they're gone. And it causes a lot of disruption for the league that they frankly didn't need. And, you know, it's a sad story. You know, like, I'm sure if you're the American Hockey League, you're thrilled to go to Vegas. And that's awesome for the league. But to lose a market like San Antonio, that's a tough hit. And I think it's going to be, a real warning sign out there that, if you're a team, even if you support your team, if you're a fan, you can still lose your team. So a little bit sobering, a little bit, of a difficult look at what the business of hockey's like here in 2020.
Yeah, and a team that's inside the top, 15 at least in attendance? I mean, they're averaging
12th, yeah.
Yeah, just under 6,000 fans a game. I mean, there are teams in this league that would be screaming to get 6,000 fans a game in their building if they could fit them.
Yeah.
And I think sobering is a good term to use. I mean, here in Belleville where I am, we had the Belleville Bulls for 30-plus years, and the parallels to what's happened in San Antonio are extremely similar to what happened here, right down to the time of year. You're getting, close to the end of the season, the playoff push. At least here, there was always kind of a rumbling that perhaps the Bulls could be sold, but it was past the Ontario Hockey League deadline of when a team could be moved. We had talked the other week about the deadline for this being a few, months from now, but for the fans to have no idea, for really the city to have no idea, we'll talk about this, that the St. Louis Blues had no idea, which to me is almost unfathomable that the AHL team would make this deal without first, at least talking it over with the NHL club. And it's a difficult thing for fans to have to process losing a team. It's almost like a death in the family. I mean, it took fans here. And attendance here in Belleville was not great when the team left, nowhere near the numbers that San Antonio's getting, but it took the fans here more than a year and plus to get over losing a team. It is not something that just happens easily.
No, it's not. And for the fans in Belleville, that's your team, but if you're a hockey fan, there is, no shortage of hockey. Of Kingston up the road, Peterborough, Oshawa. If you really want to see hockey, you can see it. High-level hockey. Now, if you're San Antonio, your closest team now is going to be the Texas Stars, who are about 2 hours north, and deal with traffic, interstate, all that. So your access to hockey is going to be pretty limited right now. And, the irony of it, I find, is – for the last really, let's say 30 years, ever since the Gretzky trade, out to LA, it's been kind of the thing you hear time and time again is we got to grow the game in the United States. Okay, that makes sense. It's a huge market. Now you lose what I believe it's the eighth largest market in North America or in the United States. That's a major market to lose. That's a crown jewel in a lot of ways for the league. That now that team is gone. And like you mentioned, there are a lot of teams in this league that have been underperforming a lot more in terms of attendance and fan support with, frankly, a lot better on-ice performance. And this San Antonio team made the playoffs four times in 18 years. They only won one playoff round in that entire time. So the fans there, they weren't there because, you know, this is a winning team. And they were there because they like hockey. You know, I always give credit to people in markets like that. You have to work to be a fan there, right? Like, you know, if you're in Winnipeg or if you're in Belleville or Ottawa or Toronto, somewhere like that, it's easy to be a fan in a lot of ways. You have hockey kind of 24/7. You don't have to go very far to find it. If you're a fan in San Antonio, I mean, that is an uphill battle. I mean, I talk to fans there all the time, you know, and there are other types of markets. And, you know, just to even get your team have a story in the newspaper or a mention on the radio or television is almost unheard of. And so those fans, they hustle and they do everything they can to support their team against, you know, a lot of difficult competition. So I feel really bad for that team. That is not a fan base that deserved to lose a team. There have been plenty of teams over the years where, frankly, you had to justify the team moving because the fan support just was not there. This was not one of them. This was a really solid market in a lot of ways, like the Houston Aeros, who had to leave because of a building issue. And, you know, that's now two really strong markets. Houston, number four overall in the U.S., that are gone, and really nothing to replace them. So my heart really goes out to those fans. I mean, I think they're going to have a difficult road ahead. The team's on the road all month, and they're going to come back. They're kind of sort of hovering on the playoff line, but this road trip, if it doesn't go well, would probably be the fatal blow for their playoff chances. You know, and I've seen teams in that situation where they're kind of one foot out the door already. It's an awkward time for fans. They don't have a whole lot to look forward to, and it almost becomes a little bit of a funeral experience, just in the sense that these fans are, you know, I know fans there. They met their wife going to games there. I mean, people get married. They have all sorts of friendships that go back years, and now that's going to be disrupted. So I really feel bad for them. It's a real tough break for that fan base.
Yeah, and you mentioned the road trip they're on. They're three games into a 10-game road trip when the news breaks. Yeah. They've had one home game, and then they were on the road in Colorado for two before that. They're not going to play another home game until February 28th, and what's that going to be like? You know, I couldn't imagine, you know, being a fan to try to – I don't want to say work up the courage, but, you know, work up the positive attitude to go to the rink. Like as a fan, do you go because you're only going to get to see your team a handful more times, or do you not go out of principle? Like, it seems like, you know, there's so many reasons that this is more difficult than it even has to be for these fans.
Well, that just goes to show you what the team was up against. Every February, for the longest time, they have to go on this month-long road trip because the San Antonio Rodeo comes in for the month, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously a huge event down there. But there's a lot of, the whole, conversion, from hockey over to a rodeo is not a small deal. And so that puts the team on the road for a month. Obviously, very difficult for the team, for the players. To be on the road for a month it's pretty brutal. They got a little bit of a better schedule this year than usual, but still. But here you are in one of the prime attendance months of the season. The team's gone on the road every year, and you feel bad for those fans the way they found out about it. You find a tweet from the Las Vegas or from the Vegas Golden Knights about it. I mean, what a way to find out about your team leaving that you don't even hear it from your own team first. So.
And let's say
I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, and Vegas, I think they deserve a lot of props, a lot of credit for their social media game, but it was fairly, it was in poor taste the way that announcement was made.
Yeah, it was just, the whole situation was. I just looked at it. It was unfortunate. You obviously never want to hear about your team leaving. Period. But you would at least like to hear it first from your own team and not have to hear it from another team because, Vegas is thrilled. They're getting their team. But, it's kind of like the good news for them is the horrible news for, San Antonio fans. So I'm going to miss this market. I thought it was always a really fun city to go to. It's always been a real dependable market in a lot of ways, even considering the on-ice performance. And now they're going to probably be gone after this year. I mean, they can somehow scramble to find something, but I wouldn't hang my hat on that. So it's obviously, I said, like the Texas Stars, you think about it, they play seven times in San Antonio this year. That's seven games now they have to make up somewhere else. They already have a tough travel schedule. It is. I mean, you have to fly everywhere other than San Antonio. So that's seven. Now that's 7 days of hotels, per diem, flight, all that. That's you didn't have before. So the ramifications are pretty significant, you know, even beyond San Antonio.
Yeah, we'll get into what's next for the Chicago Wolves and the St. Louis Blues affiliation-wise, because, again, of course, with Vegas taking San Antonio to Vegas, that leaves an AHL team without an NHL affiliate and an NHL team in the St. Louis Blues without an AHL affiliate. We'll touch on that in a moment. But we reached out to San Antonio Rampage fans and AHL fans in general through our Twitter account at Around the A Pod, which of course you can give a follow to whenever you'd like. And we got a fair bit of feedback, I would say, on the news. Perhaps the most in-depth and I won't say most heartfelt, because I think all these fans are really feeling the sting. But Nate Millett, who is on Twitter as at @coach_Millett, writes for runningwiththeherd.com. He penned a long article, essentially, outlining where he thinks things went wrong and how he's been dealing with it. That's perhaps one of the best, I think, well-rounded looks at you know, into the mindset of a longtime San Antonio Rampage fan and how they're feeling. But we heard from so many more fans about the move and exactly how they were processing the news.
Yeah, we did. We reached out, and fortunately, we got some really good feedback, both from San Antonio fans and from fans elsewhere. I mean, that was a popular city to go to. I mean, the weather down there is beautiful, even in the wintertime, most of the time. It's a beautiful city if you ever go there. I mean, they have the Riverwalk there. I mean, it's a lot of kind of, a lot of ways, historic architecture. I mean, it's kind of its own city. It's not your typical, you know, maybe cookie cutter type city. So it's a fun trip, especially if, you know, this year, like say the Toronto Marlies went down there and they played in Texas and San Antonio, you can make a little, you know, holiday of it. So, you know, it's a city that's, you know, had a lot to offer even for visiting fans. So the feedback was pretty heartfelt. You mentioned Nate, you know, a long, long time fan, met his wife, you know, at a San Antonio game years ago. And, you know, I thought if you have a chance to read it, I'd recommend going to his Twitter accounts and getting the link, because he really spelled it out like in a way that's it's difficult to put into words. You know, for a lot of fans, the feelings and the emotions are all over the place. And, you know, there's, you know, all the stages of grief that you hear about. You know, there's anger, there's denial, there's, you know, bargaining, everything. And I think a lot of fans can relate to that. And this is really the fear for a lot of fans. You know, it's not just wins and losses. I mean, this is a league, you know, just the nature of minor league sports, you can lose your team on short notice. You know, if a few things don't go the right way, I mean, it's a tenuous existence sometimes. And they're kind of living the worst fears of every AHL or really even just minor league hockey fan out there.
Yeah, absolutely. We heard from SA Texan 55 on Twitter, who said that this one's going to sting for a long time because of the way it blindsided everyone. There was no rumblings that the team was looking to move. They chalk it up to attendance being good, but the competition not being good on the ice, and just said plainly that it sucks. And I think that's perhaps one of the best ways to sum it all up.
Yeah, there's really no way around it. You know, if you're a fan there, I mean, you've sat that, Susan. I mean, I can't stress that enough. They were always a team, it seemed like they got the last pick of affiliation. They got the Florida Panthers when that was a difficult situation. They got the Arizona Coyotes, or actually back then they were still Phoenix. That wasn't a great setup. Then they would go back to Florida. Then they get Colorado, and they finally had this setup. It looked like it was all in place, and it all falls apart. So, you know, another fan we heard from, Twitter handle is Senorita Ding Dong. I broke it down pretty well. She said going to the final games will be tough, not only because of the lame duck situation, but because it's so final. When you've had so many losing seasons, you sometimes go because of the people behind the scenes, and it'll be rough to say goodbye. She also said that I also think the last thing I'll do as I leave the arena is to look at Jessica Redfield's press box banner one last time. You know, a little background on that. Jessica was someone I knew. She worked for the Rampage a number of years ago as part of their media team. A real strong up and coming, person. I thought she had the brightest future possible. And unfortunately, she lost her life in that Colorado movie theater shooting in 2012. And, so the Rampage had put up a banner in her honor. And, it's sad. I mean, she mentions the relationships that fans build. That was one of them. And then so she finished off saying, last but not least, I always expect this to happen after other cities had lost their teams in expansion. Merry-go-round affiliates, it always felt like we were a redheaded stepchild. So, she really had some good things to say there. I thought she really kind of summed it up well. Fans are really feeling it. They're struggling with this, and it's not what they expected. You know, they thought they were pretty secure having that long-term affiliation, but we're in a different era now of minor league hockey, especially the American Hockey League. I feel like we talk about California and Arizona and Nevada every week, and it's true. Yeah. I mean, the money is just flowing into that area. I can't stress that enough. And when you start getting, team or companies like AEG and OVG, into the business, there's money there. Those are not companies that go into money losing ventures. So the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights are involved, there's some serious money coming into the American Hockey League. This is not slapshot or anything like that. This is big, big time money. These players are living pretty well now. The salaries are going up every year. You just look at some of the markets where, San Diego, Las Vegas, Tucson, these are major league cities in a lot of ways, or at least good, strong AAA cities. So it's just it's a different time right now. And I think, this is the growing pains of eventually getting the league to where it wants to be. But unfortunately, there's some people along the way who get hurt really through no fault of their own.
Yeah, and tough as well, obviously for the fans, but also for the staff. Obviously, a lot of people work for these franchises, so they essentially find out a couple months in advance that they're not going to have jobs when the season ends. So this is a wide-reaching impact on a lot of people, and we send our best wishes to everyone around the San Antonio Rampage. You said it earlier, Patty. It feels like a funeral is kind of the feeling that you get, and we'll get in a moment into the upside for the fans in Vegas and the Golden Knights, but it's a real tough situation for everyone involved.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that, because there is a tendency, the new shiny object, and you kind of gloss over the old team, so to speak. But, San Antonio was a real good partner in this league for a long time. I'm glad you mentioned the staff there because, American Hockey League staff, ECHL staff, wherever you're talking about, these are lean operations. There's not a lot of extra staff just sitting around in an American Hockey League front office. I've seen it with my own eyes. I mean, those people are busy. They work long days. They work, summers. They work, the whole nine yards, weekends, every weekend of the year, during the hockey season. These are often younger, maybe 20-somethings who are trying to get their foot in the door in the pro sports business. They worked their butts off. And like you said, now, for them, they don't just lose a team. They lose their job and their livelihood, and they have to scramble now. And it's hard to get your foot in the door in pro sports to find a good job. So if you had a good setup there as a San Antonio front office member, this is really hard. You see this business loses a lot of good people for situations like this where, through no fault of their own, the team decides to, they have to go somewhere else. And, it hurts a lot of, kind of innocent people along the way. And I really think of some of the people down there who just, they work tirelessly selling sponsorships, tickets, broadcasters, you name it. And they're in right now for a real difficult period of, uncertainty.
Yeah. And if anybody has thoughts, if you're a Rampage fan and you need to vent a little bit, hit us up on Twitter at Around the A-Pod, or send us an email at aroundtheapod@gmail.com, and maybe we can get you on the show as well, get some firsthand accounts and feedback on the grieving process, if you will, as the San Antonio Rampage get set to head out to Vegas at the end of this season and to start play in the 2020-2021 AHL campaign. We're going to talk in a few moments here about another team that has excellent attendance numbers, the San Diego Gulls. We're going to chat with Emily Harlan and Andy Zilch, who work for and cover the Gulls. But before we get to them, Pat, let's just get into how this move will affect both the Chicago Wolves and the St. Louis Blues, affiliation-wise. What does it mean for those teams moving forward?
I mean, if you're St. Louis Blues GM Doug Armstrong, you just have to be kind of beside yourself right now. You lost your affiliation in 2017 that you had with Chicago, the Chicago Wolves. Vegas came, took that affiliation. You had to send your players, scatter them around the league for a year. You finally had this set up in San Antonio. Now this is falling apart. Going to Vegas again. So you're kind of probably shaking your fist at the Vegas Golden Knights direction, because this is a difficult spot right now. You're the Blues. You don't have an affiliation set up for next year. It's going to be difficult for them to find a good fit. It's going to be difficult if they ever hope to acquire their own franchise. Now, 20 of the 32, both current and future franchises in the league are owned by NHL clubs. That leaves 12 independent clubs. But you go through that list, you know, the Hershey's of the world, the Grand Rapids, those teams aren't going anywhere. They're solid as can be. So they're in a tight spot if you're the St. Louis Blues. They don't have a great setup right now. Now, Vegas is leaving the Chicago Wolves. Natural speculation would be, well, why don't St. Louis and the Chicago Wolves get together? Funny you ask, because that relationship didn't end so well back in 2017. They just saw differently, I think it's fair to say, on how best to run the team. And so the Blues are in a difficult spot right now for what they're going to do. And I don't see an easy fit here. You know, either somebody has to agree to kind of, cooperate here, or we have to kind of go off the board here and do something a little bit more unexpected in order to make this fit. But I mean, this day and age, you need to have your own affiliate. You can't be trying to send your players off to the Belleville Senators or the San Diego Gulls or something where they're not going to get the prioritization or the playing time or play your systems or anything like that. So you want to have your players all under one roof playing for your team. And that's the situation the Blues find themselves in. And for them, it's all too familiar. Having gone through this a couple years ago, they had now, if they can't get this squared away for next year, face a similar situation.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for them to figure out. We assume they will. Some good news, I suppose, for the Vegas franchise is that they've reported today, which was a Tuesday taping, that they've sold 4,000 season ticket memberships already. So if we want to put a positive spin on things for the future of that franchise, it seems like the interest is there in Vegas, and it's not like they're moving a team somewhere where nobody's going to care about it.
Well, that is, if you're the American Hockey League, that is the the silver lining of the situation. Report in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, I mean, wow, 4,000 tickets, deposits, just a few days after announcing the team. The appetite for hockey in Las Vegas right now is just really through the roof, and, they're trying to capitalize on it, while the going's good, and, I think that they have a long-term plan there as well, but, obviously they're still in the honeymoon phase to some extent, so, from a fan standpoint, that's great. Obviously, logistics are excellence. It'll be similar to the Toronto Marlies or the San Jose Barracuda, where you're in the same town. Move your players back and forth easily. It's easy for management to keep tabs on players. Just logistics are just 1,000% easier, and salary cap issues, all the factors that we've discussed many times, all come into play here. And, you know, that whole area, that Las Vegas market, suburban area, I mean, it's just booming, you know, construction going up left and right, you know, money coming in. And they're actually building a whole new practice facility just for the AHL club. So things are looking good if you're a Vegas hockey fan, and certainly if you're the Golden Knights. They really wanted this bad. They, I'm sure, paid, from what I've heard, quite a tidy sum of money to make it happen, to buy this franchise. So great news for them. Great news if you're a player. I mean, if you're, let's say you're a 25-year-old player, free agent this summer, you're looking at your options. Playing in Vegas sounds pretty nice, right? You know, maybe you sign your $400,000 year contract to play in the American League two-way, and you live in Vegas. Not a bad setup. I mean, you look at players now, like, this is not the old-time minor league hockey kind of in the old, small towns. I mean, you're living in places like Vegas, San Diego, really nice places. And, players have to be loving this. The opportunity there, either you're with the NHL club or you're in the AHL, but you can stay in the same city. You know, if you're a young guy with a family, makes it a lot easier in that regard. So everything, you know, on paper and in just reality, fits great for Vegas. The unfortunate thing is you just had to come at the expense of San Antonio.
Yeah, great for the players, great for the Golden Knights franchise. Pretty good move for the league as far as moving somewhere where there's going to be a lot of attention and support, but real, real tough for the fans, for the staff, for the people of San Antonio to lose their longtime team, and we certainly feel for them here on Around the A. We're going to head back out to California. We will check in on the San Diego Gulls. Andy Zilch, Emily Harlan are with us next to talk about the team that went to the Western Conference Final last season, but is now trying to battle its way back above the playoff line in the Pacific Division. That's coming up next here on Episode 16 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network. Episode 16 of Around the A continues. We're checking in on the West Coast this week, and time to take a look at the San Diego Gulls for the first time in Around the A's brief history. We've got two guests on at the same time, Emily Harlan and Andy Zilch, both with different roles for the San Diego Gulls. Emily covers the team for Fox Sports San Diego, among many other roles. Andy is the play-by-play broadcaster for radio and TV, and Around the A fans listening in from Utica might recognize him as well. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're excited to be on with both of you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We like to start off these first-time interviews by learning a little bit more about the market itself. San Diego obviously has some pretty major league sports teams there. Where do the Gulls fit in? And, how does the franchise find an identity in, such a big league market like that?
Yeah, that's a question we get a lot, just hockey in Southern California, people that aren't around it or aren't exposed to it don't necessarily think of Southern California or San Diego as a hockey town. One of the things that surprised me the most when I took the job with the Gulls was the fan base and how dedicated these fans are. They're out at every event, at every game, cheering the team on. And it really does feel like the Gulls belong in Southern California, belong in San Diego, and it has turned into a hockey town, definitely. And a lot of the fans here, were their parents were fans of the Gulls when they were here before with the WHL and IHL. And so now that the Gulls are back in the AHL or, out here in San Diego, it's a whole nother generation of Gulls fans that feel like they grew up with hockey. So it's a very natural fit. We just had Hockey Day SoCal, which is broadcast on Fox Sports and all the way up in LA, highlighting the rivalry with the Gulls in the Rain and the Ducks and the Kings, which was a great turnout and a great day. So it's definitely a hockey town.
Yeah, and obviously, you listed off a pile of different both, you know, NHL and AHL teams that are really within driving distance there. How do the fans, I guess, match up as far as who they support at the NHL level? Is it mostly Ducks fans that you see in San Diego?
Well, I think we get a combination of both. I mean, that's what makes this so special with this relationship with Anaheim. And this is the first team that I've had that's actually had an NHL affiliate that's within striking distance. And it certainly shows, too. And I mean, when we were in the playoffs last year, the Ducks didn't make a run, and we did. And we went all the way to the conference finals. And there was a lot of Ducks jerseys in there. Not saying that there isn't normally, but you could tell that there was fans that were coming down from Anaheim on a regular basis to see what the future of the Ducks brings. So it's been fantastic. That's, I think, one reason why we have such a good attendance, too, is because we bring a good marketing scheme to the table in terms of our endgame entertainment. And then the product on the ice has been fantastic. I mean, really, ever since the Gulls came into the league, they've been a competing team, so that certainly helps with attendance.
We chatted earlier on in the show with Chris Pichet from Stockton and kind of asked him as well about marketing hockey to people in essentially a non-traditional hockey market. How much did that playoff run help in that regard? And for you guys being with the team, what was the experience like to go so deep?
Well, I think it helped. I mean, obviously going that deep brings more attention, more televised games that we had, more eyes are on it. And I think at the end of the day, though, what makes us such a viable organization is the fact that we're not only on playoff performance or just regular season performance, but around the area. We just had a 3-year agreement with Rady's Children's Hospital. I mean, we're a team that's not about wins and losses. It's getting out in the community, and the players are up there. They're forefront on their willingness to use their own time to go help out the children, the hospitals, anything that needs a lending hand. And it's also led by our head coaches, too. Dallas Eakins last year and Kevin Dineen this year. I mean, those two guys are setting the tone by being one of the active people to get out in the community. I remember for Thanksgiving Day, Kevin Dineen was the first one to mention something by going out, and they went to a shelter and they donated turkeys, they donated time. So I think that also helps build good awareness with our club and continues to help us grow throughout the community.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like Andy said, you know, there's certain things that the team does that's bringing the sport to maybe kids or families or people that wouldn't normally know about hockey or know about the goal. They're doing street hockey pop-ups. They're going into schools. And it's actually on a pretty regular basis that they're going out into the community, really kind of bringing that awareness. So we definitely see it.
You know, you look at Petrarca Arena, it's definitely more of an old-school building, old-school feel to it. How do you market the club? What's kind of your target demographic or audience? And, you know, what is, for people who haven't been to San Diego for a game, what's the atmosphere like in that building with one of the top attendance teams in the league?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't think that there's one specific demographic that I'm seeing. When I walk around the concourse every game, I see fans of pretty much all ages there. There's kids there, there's older people there, there's, you know, college students there. It's something where I think that's really special, where it seems like it's reaching people of all ages, of all kinds of people. And the atmosphere is honestly really fun and really loud. A lot of these games, if I'm doing post interviews with the players, you know, one of the questions that I like to ask a lot is, this building is loud. Like, how do you get from these fans? You know, you can always, there's always credit the fans for kind of keeping them in the game and getting them pumped up throughout the game. And it's an atmosphere that's really fun to be in. And I think if people haven't been to a Gulls game or they're considering coming out, I think they should definitely check it out. It's something like I haven't experienced, especially on the AHL level.
You mentioned celebrating hockey in Southern California. I think everybody's got a taste of that rivalry at the All-Star game with Anthony Stolarz getting booed by the Ontario fans. What is that rivalry like between San Diego and Ontario, right up the road?
It's really unique, and I feel just because of the proximity in California makes it that unique LA-Anaheim rivalry too, because that's your original hatred between these two organizations. So when you go into their barn, I mean, there's always boos for Gulls players. There's always boos when they announce the starting lineup. And it's not just, you know, a few scattered fans. It's the whole arena. And you heard it during the All-Star game, like you guys mentioned. But then all of a sudden, finally, when Anthony Stolarz made a stack pad save during the game itself, that's when the fans finally started to come around for him. But there's actually – there's a really fun hatred. And I really enjoyed as a Gulls employee, as a Gulls fan, as the broadcaster, I really liked the fact that they booed him just because that's what it's all about. It's all in good fun. And then that's kind of where it stops too. I mean, you know, we respect each other. I really enjoy the Ontario staff. I think they're really hardworking. They know what they're doing. And they're a machine over there. They have really good ticket sales too. And that's what it takes. It's just a little fun on the ice hatred, but then you move forward, you move past it, and you work together.
We brought in Kevin Dineen this year. Like Dallas Eakins, a coach who had NHL experience and is now back in the American Hockey League. What has it been like? What's the adjustment been like having Kevin there coming in and taking over the club?
Well, one thing I love about him is the onus that he takes on his club. And he has said time and again this year that he takes full responsibility for the 0-6 start that we had. And he doesn't make excuses, and he has the same accountability with his players too. But he's not one of those coaches who's just going to cut your legs out and tell you what you're doing wrong. I think he's got great positive reinforcement for these players, and it shows on the ice too. And I spoke with him after one big win that we had recently, and my question was, you know, I think that it shows from your team's performance that these guys are here to work, but they're also having fun. And he echoed those statements on his response too. If you're coming to the rink and you're not having fun, then there's something wrong and there's something that needs to be adjusted. But I think his culture has carried over to what Dallas laid the ground for the first 4 years.
We're chatting about San Diego Gulls with Emily Harlan and Andy Zilch. Andy's the radio TV play-by-play guy. Emily holds a number of different roles with the Gulls, including covering them for Fox Sports San Diego, in-arena host, and things like that. Emily, you were talking about the in-arena experience. What's game-like night at the Pechanga Arena?
I love games. They're so much fun. The fans are always so into it. You know, we're really, really lucky with our fan base, just having a dedicated group that's there and having a really good turnout. I know we're really lucky. I know the players speak about it, you know, when they visit other arenas and then coming home, and just kind of the atmosphere that we have on game nights. It's always very supportive, you know, regardless of how the team's doing. And I think that's something that's really special to see. You know, there's a group of fans that wait outside of, you know, the arena and clap as the players leave every game, regardless of if it's a win or if it's a loss. Game nights are always fun. Our game entertainment department does a really great job of just keeping things fresh and interesting, and our organization is really wonderful about allowing us the freedom to do fun things in game and just to really get the crowd involved. So I think the fans see how much the organization appreciates them and appreciates their support, and I think they also hear it echoed from the players how much they mean to them having that presence there. So it's a really great environment to be in every game, I would say.
Yeah, it's something that you know, here in Belleville we're trying to, I think, build a little bit more on, is that fan engagement. You know, the American Hockey League is such a different beast to what especially fans here were used to, so I think that game night atmosphere goes a long way. As far as the affiliation goes with the Anaheim Ducks, well, how does that work, I guess, logistically? I mean, you're not too far away, obviously, from Anaheim. How often are you know, the Ducks folks there and keeping tabs on things, and what's that affiliation like?
Oh, it's constant, hands-on from Bob Murray and everybody affiliated with the Ducks. I know during the NHL All-Star break, Dallas came down to take in a game, but I know they are watching on AHL TV. I know when they're not here and we're on the road, they're watching. I mean, the past few years have been a very crucial year for the growth of the Anaheim Ducks. Even when guys aren't there, we got a lot of first and second rounders and up-and-comer guys, and a lot of teams can say that, but when you have almost last year double-digit numbers of first, second, and third round guys, then you have some high importance on what's going on in the American Hockey League. And I firsthand have seen it. I've seen not only just Bob Murray, but I've seen high executives from Anaheim. I've seen the owners come down to several games. And I think that means a lot, too, not only to the growth of your club, but your organization and just the people as well. You're trying to grow these AHL guys to be NHL guys. So I think it's been really good, really hands-on constantly.
You mentioned that 0-6 start. So you go, you have that. You have a new head coach, 10 goals in those six games. What goes through a team when that happens, and how did they dig themselves out of it to now be, you know, 1 point out of a playoff spot, you know, mid-February here?
I think they all knew they could do it, and just getting that first win off the back was just so crucial. They all knew they were good. We have a really high-powered offense, and, yeah. and they looked in the mirror, and they said, we can get this done. We just got to keep applying ourselves, making sure that everything's going the right way. And there were some bounces that were going in the wrong direction. That happens, but for this team to go 0-6, it was a little surprising, and they were able to overcome it. I think the hard work and the attitude is what kept this team going in the right place, and it started from the head coach again, and not only him, but the leadership group here too. I mean, our first-year captain, Sam Carey, he's a punchbag guy. Yeah, that's why he's such a good goal scorer in this league for the second consecutive year. I remember head coach Kevin Dineen said, you know, if you go 0-6 to start the season, a lot of eyes are going to go in your direction, but if you go on an 0-6 run in February, might not take that much attention. But he's good that he's happy that it got out of the way, and this team's soaring, I think, because of it. It's an early season growing.
Matt Comtois, a really nice finish to a season last year, got into the playoff run there. Back again now, full-time pro. What development have you seen from him, you know, really from last year into this year?
Well, first off, I think just as a person, I think he's way more mature than his age. And especially after what he went through last year, I mean, that's very difficult to get such backlash on social media on something of that nature and something no person deserves to take such repercussions for. So whether that made him a stronger person or whether that's just the way he was growing up, I've only known him briefly for the end of last year and then, of course, this year. He's a guy who he keeps to himself when necessary, and only being a rookie, he soaks in a lot, especially from the older guys, and he just puts his head down and works. I think that's what makes him such a good hockey player is he's learning, he's taking everything in, and especially not just from leaders, from the coaching staff. He's always asking questions. After practice, they have opportunity time. He's always out there putting extra work in. I mean, you know, nobody aspires to be an AHL player. They aspire to be in the NHL, and I think that it certainly shows from his extra work.
Isaac Lundstrom, another first-rounder, 19 years old to start the season, similar in the sense that he got some time last year in the AHL. How's his growth gone, you know, as really he's getting a full adjustment here to North America?
Yeah, a lot like Comtois, I think Lundstrom's really happy just to kind of be in one area. Both of those guys last year started. They were bouncing between the NHL, the AHL. Then Comtois went to juniors. Lundstrom went to Sweden. They both went to World Juniors, then back to junior hockey and then Swedish Elite League. So I think it's a similar story for those two guys. Lundstrom's kind of catching that brotherhood that he has being with one organization. I think that's been very important for a younger player like that. You get somebody to look up to, somebody to mold your game after, and your work attitude as well. And I mean, there's a lot of good veteran leadership in the AHL, but I think that we have a solid one, maybe second to none compared to some of these teams in the AHL. So for him to look up to some of these guys and hone his game the way he needs to, certainly good for his development, and arguably, I think, one of the best 200-foot players that we have on our team.
San Diego's always kind of had a good veteran mix there. You have Chris Muller came over from Syracuse, Chase DeLeo, Andrew Polarowski, the playoff MVP last year, back kind of after an extended absence. What do those three guys do for the team here, kind of as guys that can hold things together when there are difficulties?
Well, it's interesting. You know, DeLeo's, he is a veteran exempt player, but he's not even over 24 years old. You know, he's a guy who's been around the block, played 3 years in Manitoba, and then maybe one of the best deals that has occurred in impact of San Diego Gulls hockey. We get him, and he is, first of all, just as a person, he's always smiling. He's never down on himself, never moping his head. And same could be said for Chris Mueller. And Andrew Podorowski too. You know, Mueller's still kind of fresh here to San Diego this season. Obviously, he was there the first year. So you bring in guys like that that know what it takes to win. I mean, Mueller's got the Calder Cups that we know of. You got Podorowski that just won, and Chase DeLeo still pursuing a championship. So guys of that stature that have that positive mentality breed even when things are low, I think has a greater impact more than anything else.
All right, lastly, before we let you guys go, want to get thoughts from both of you on the tight race for playoff spots in the Pacific Division coming into the week. San Diego only a point behind the Ontario Reign and the playoff line, three games in hand. I mean, you mentioned all of the experienced guys that are in the lineup and the hot prospects that are there. What does that group have to do to get over the hump, get in front of Ontario, and make a charge up the standings here through the final couple of months of the season?
Yeah, I think one thing to kind of look at is the fact that the Gulls were kind of in the similar situation last year, you know, with a slow start and then making a run and a push and getting into the playoffs and moving all the way to the Western Conference Finals. So I think this is a group, although there are some new players here, we have some of the same guys as last year. It's a group that knows how to battle. You know, they know what needs to be done, and they're proving that they're going in the right direction to take those steps to get it done. So it's something that obviously, you know, is not going to be the easiest of paths, but it's something that I think this team knows how to do. And, you know, obviously having the support, like we talked about earlier, from all the fans and the organization behind them to get them there. So,
yeah, I mean, the team's been on such a hot run lately, 10-1-2 in their last 13. But even after the big win that they just had, the message was, we're not there yet. I mean, we're not even in a playoff spot, despite how hot the team's been. They don't have anything secured yet, and they won't until there's a little X next to their name, or maybe even a Y, hopefully. But I think that's the thing, is it's right now it's just short-term goals until the long-term goal is achieved, and it's just going to be a continual, I hate to throw out the cliche, but that day-to-day mentality, because once you start getting ahead of yourself, then things are going to collapse.
Yeah, but you guys are bang on, though. That experience that roster has already, where they went last year, that's going to go a long way down the stretch for sure as far as the confidence goes. Now you just got to get it done on the ice to get into the playoffs. Emily Harlan, Andy Zilch from the San Diego Gulls. You can find them on Twitter as well. Emily's at Emily B. Harlan. Andy's at Andy _Zilch. We appreciate your time, guys. Thanks so much for checking in with us.
Thank you, guys. We had a great time chatting.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Set to wrap up episode 16 of season 1 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network. David Foote, Patrick Williams. Thanks again to Andy and Emily for their insight into the San Diego Gulls. You know, tack that onto the list of franchises I wouldn't mind getting out to pay a visit to, Pat.
Yeah, San Diego is obviously one of the most beautiful in the entire United States, really. I mean, I would put it against pretty much any city, frankly, anywhere. Beautiful weather, beautiful scenery, you know, everything you can want. I mean, I talked to Anthony Stolarz a couple of weeks ago at the All-Star game, and my gosh, like, he sounded like a spokesman for the Visitors Bureau. Just how much him and his teammates love it out there. I mean, you know, you go to practice, you come out, you go out and play golf. You know, they go to the zoo together there. You know, you go out to dinner, you know, at the beach. I mean, just – what a setup, right? Like, if you're especially you're a young 20 something guy and you're playing pro hockey in San Diego, you're making a living. I mean, you're living the dream, really, other than
Absolutely.
The NHL. Yeah, that's a fun market. And like, I really like how they've targeted to their fan base. You know, they really go after kind of the kids, you know, the 20 something kids who are looking for a night out, you know, pretty affordable. They have a thing, kids from local universities, you know, weeknight games, $15, get you in the building. You can get like $2 beers and, you know, just make the night of it. And so you get kind of a good energetic young vibe in there, you know, that really kind of makes it, you know, really lively building. Then they obviously have that great rivalry with Ontario, carries right down from the NHL team. So, you know, that those two have really been a huge success. They're 3-4 in lead attendance this year. San Diego, back-to-back years, top first place in attendance. So huge success stories. I think for San Diego, the interesting thing was they'd gone without hockey for a while. You know, they lost their team about, I think, 2005, and really hadn't had anything since. And they just have come in there and just built a great, really from the ground up in a lot of ways. Get a lot of good cooperation from Anaheim and build a real success story. You know, it's kind of them in Ontario are the, you know, you always hear Dave Andrews point to the two of them as kind of the crown jewels of that whole California move from 2015. So, you know, it was fun to talk to Andy and Emily and just get their take. Both of them are around the team there every day. And, you know, two pros, obviously. Andy's been around. He's done St. Louis Blues games. Emily works for Fox Sports San Diego. She's done Major League Sports, the San Diego Padres. So, you know, two people who really bring kind of a high level, high skill level there. And it was a lot of fun to talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's turn our focus to this week. It's a real busy week in the American Hockey League. A lot of midweek games, some pretty important divisional matchups coming up as we head right through the weekend and even into Monday. A rare trio of Monday games, Family Day here in Ontario. We'll see the Belleville Senators play Syracuse on Monday, but and the Toronto Marlies home to Binghamton. What are some of the matchups that are sticking out to you this week?
Well, Toronto-Belleville, Friday night in Belleville's always one that jumps out. Toronto, the Marlies, you know, kind of unfamiliar territory fighting for a playoff spot this year. Start of a home-and-home. They play Saturday afternoon in Toronto. It's always a fun rivalry. So that's the first thing I'm looking at. San Diego goes to Iowa for back-to-back games. Andy had referenced that. He's going to have to get used to the cold weather again after being in sunny California. Iowa's obviously, we discussed, was a top team this year so far, and San Diego's coming on strong. So kind of looking at that as two matchups. I think Lehigh Valley's another one you have to look at. Their home back-to-back nights, Bridgeport Friday, Hartford Saturday. They need to make up some ground fast. They're falling behind. If they can't really start to string some streets together, they could fall out of this pretty fast. Then they go Sunday into Hershey. So that's a tough setup there. Hershey also, you know, they have a home and home with Binghamton. Binghamton's been kind of just a real nice surprise here in the last month or two. So Hershey's been on fire for the better part of the end of November. So some good matchups on the weekend. And then you mentioned that Monday holiday is a holiday, obviously, in Canada and down in the States as well. So you have games on both sides of the border, you know, a nice little afternoon sampler all the way out from Belleville all the way out to San Jose. So pretty nice setup, you know, a good weekend, you know, good matchups, some interesting new matchups as well. So it should be fun.
Should be. Get your AHL TV subscription ready. You can click around and all kinds of action with some, you know, early playoff run implications in the standings with all the divisional games. We, of course, will recap all that for you next week when we get back for episode number 17. For now, we'll say goodbye from the Around the A studios. Thanks again to Andy Zilch and Emily Harlan in San Diego. Thanks to Chris Pichet out in Stockton. And a thanks to you for tuning in again. We hope you'll join us next week for another episode of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Thanks for listening to Around the A. Be sure to tune in again next week. Find Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Interact with us on social media. Give us your thoughts using the hashtag Around the A and follow us at Around the A Pod.